Coming to you from the Salad Dressing Room Studios in West Roxbury, Massachusetts, I'm Bobby Pape. This show has everything. This week, the run sheet says the finale, though I'm convinced we've got more places to go. For now, we'll call it the finale of the Tishy Cinema Road Trip Spectacular. That's right, it's only taken 4 years for us to get to the extreme ends of the most recent states to the Union, Alaska and Hawaii. Joining me for a road trip that I'm not convinced that Hillary's minivan could make, from the Stick of Butter Studios in New Brighton, Minnesota, the sun never sets on Anne without a plan, with a plan, Lundholm. Good evening, Anne.
Good evening, Bobby. It just took us a long time because we went the Jeremy route on all of it.
Oh boy, all of us sleeping in the minivan is a much scarier scenario.
God, yes, we.
And in the Money Pit Studios in Detroit, Michigan, it's Meredith on the Lamb Van Harn. Good evening, Meredith.
Good evening.
Guess yeah, not really the lamb so much as walkabout.
That's right.
And of course, you've already heard her because she's already mad at me. In the Middle-Aged Mama Studios in Austin, Texas, it's Hillary. Let's pick the one movie set in Hawaii that's incredibly depressing. Livingston Butler. Good evening, Hillary.
Hey, but I'm also taking offense, really, to the fact that you doubt that my Sienna could make it to Hawaii. They ship cars. The Sienna could make it.
They do.
The
ship.
Sienna is this. I got the
how?
I don't know. But the
there's this thing called an ocean, Hillary.
I don't. It's like Miss Frizzle's magic school bus.
It can drive through the ocean. It's fine.
I just could do it.
I feel like it's just a Flex Seal infomercial waiting to happen.
It did. The Sienna turned. It turned 8 years old. Oh, ownership of in my house at 8 years old on April 16th. I patted it gently and said, thank you for your service. Keep going.
Yeah.
The fact that you know your car's birthday is somewhat disturbing to me.
Well, if I remember correctly, the Sienna turned 8 the same day Will McQuillan turned 80. So
it's true. And it's one of my really good friends' birthdays. So, you know, like that's just how my brain works. I remember birthdays. So then I can relate. If it was like April 23rd, I would never remember that. But April 16th, I remember that one.
Oh, my God, Hillary, when you were searching for a date, I thought in my head 23rd.
Because 23 is like, well, it's I think
one of
it was
those
a,
numbers.
Yeah, it's just as like yeah. It means nothing to me.
It's prime.
It's MJ.
Yeah. It is, yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, I guess. But I don't like it. I don't like that number.
The Sienna is here, Scottie Pippen. as you can already tell, we're primed for some small talk. We'll also get into the mailbag. Then we will proceed with our trips to those non-contiguous United States, followed by Tishy Recommends and how you, yes, you, can get involved with the show. And this week, two of you did with voicemails, which is great. But before we get to those, Meredith, you're heavy on the top of the small talk list.
Yeah, I haven't been on the show in a while. The first reason is...
Yeah, because we were mad at you.
I know.
Yeah, you were kicked off.
I'm
you sorry. Had to go in like a penalty box.
It's been a long time. But so first week of April, I went to D.C. for a conference. It's called AdvaMed, very exciting. It was FDA recommendations for medical device companies, which I'm sure everyone is super interested in.
Bring the popcorn.
I mean, honestly, the speakers were like, they were all from the FDA and they were more engaging than I thought. They were like funny and interesting. It was actually a good conference. But it was pouring rain the entire time. So I had all these grand plans to like go check out the National Mall and like, you know, see all the monuments and stuff. And every time I went to leave the hotel, it was just like pouring. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to do this. So I didn't really get to see anything at all. But it was like a Monday, Tuesday, leave Wednesday kind of thing. So I didn't have a ton of time. Yeah. The hotel was lovely. That's about all I can say about DC. I had a nice Italian dinner. I had some really good pasta, but I walked in my heels and like for some reason all the sidewalks in DC, at least around the White House are like, I don't know, strangely small cement tiles with a lot of grout in between. And I was wearing heels, and my heels, I ruined these shoes because my heels would sink into the spaces between the tiles, and it just like destroyed them. And I'm kind of pissed about that.
Can you charge it back? Can you like expense those?
I don't think so. I also forgot to get receipts for like almost every single meal that I got, so I didn't expense any of my.
Oh no!
Because I'm so used to saying, "Oh no, I don't need a receipt."
You're like, "Shit, I do need a receipt."
Yeah, so I kind of it was a kind of a negative financial decision, but oh well. That's
I
not
forget if it was. I forget if it was here or somewhere nationally, but I remember a news story not too long ago about some restaurant on Grubhub or whatever that was naming all of their menu items after different office supplies so you could buy lunch and then write it off.
I've seen that. A burger is just like a printer or paper or something.
Yeah, it's like one ream of paper or a box of paper clips for fries or whatever. Yeah.
The other thing, that is not on the list is that I wasn't on the show last week because I I woke up that morning and saw a weird cluster of red dots on my torso. And I was like, what is this? It looks like a weird spider bite. And then the more I thought about it, the more I Googled, I was like, shit.
Wait a second.
I think this is shingles. So Meredith. I went to urgent care and I do have shingles and I still
yes dear listeners it's shingles.
I still have shingles. I'm done. They gave me a prescription for Valtrex, which did not feel great. But I was like, well, at least I can kayak and laugh while doing
which
so
classic upbeat Motown song is that? I don't remember.
Good question. I Feel Good is kind of my go-to.
Yeah, that could be it. Sure. Yeah.
So I had kind of an uncomfortable week of shingles on my torso, on my left side. They gave me betamethasone steroid cream to put on it, which helped. And honestly, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. I texted my mom. She had shingles a couple years ago that was so bad, like, it was in her mouth and in her throat.
No,
thank you.
No.
We're just like, no.
Gagging over here. No. Just thinking about it. Oh, nope. My gosh.
My sister had it when she was 34. My brother has had it a couple of times.
Jeez.
Yeah.
God.
And I know somebody who had
the shingles family.
I know somebody who had it when they were 22. Like, it's insane. Because everyone's like, I thought you were too young for shingles, but nope.
You're like, au contraire.
I am old. So, I'm a shingles-ridden old lady right now. but it's getting better. I didn't have the like fever, headache, fatigue that a lot of people get, so I'm counting myself lucky. It was just very painful and very itchy. But I'm done with my Valtrex, and hopefully it's on the mend. They're starting to go away.
I'm raising my hand. I have a question. Mm-hmm. Is it as contagious as OG chickenpox?
So it is for people who haven't had chickenpox or the vaccine for chickenpox.
Got it.
Because it's the same virus. It lives in your body. It gets stored in your nerves, which is why it hurts so much. And so anybody who hasn't had chickenpox can get it. So I asked the doctor, like, can I just do my usual stuff? Can I go to the gym? She's like, as long as you're covered, it's fine. So I didn't have my tits out at the gym for once.
Well, that's a first.
I know. And I don't think I've infected anyone, so.
Good. Good. Shrew. Welcome back to the land of the living.
Thank you.
I mean, I guess we've sort of been in, but yeah, that sucks.
It does suck, but I'm glad that my mom said the sooner you get on medicine, the better. And I think that kind of saved me from most of the other effects. But yeah, it was not fun. Don't wish it on anyone.
Your hypochondria saved you. Mm-hmm.
This weird spider bite. That spider that bit me 10 times in one spot. I was like, what a crazy spider.
You got no powers from it?
Nope.
Dang it.
If only.
I'm glad that urgent care actually helped for you, because last time I went to urgent care, I was in writhing pain from what may or may not have apparently been kidney stone in hindsight. And after a couple hours of poking at me and watching me wince, they were just like, we can't do anything. Sorry. Here's your bill.
Wow.
And then
so helpful.
You should go to the ED. It's like, all right. Okay, fine. Which also really couldn't do all that much, but at least they could take pictures of it. So score one for urgent care, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, it was good. The other thing that's been going on in my life is cat news. If you follow me on Instagram, which you should, Megadeth, go check out my more recent pictures. There is a tortie cat who has been living in my backyard for a couple of months, and I've been feeding her because I'm a sucker, as you all know. And we had a cold snap in January, and I felt terrible for all these cats, so I bought a heated cat house, and it's been on my back porch for a couple months, and this tortie moved in, and I was feeding her, and she was starting to get a little chunky, and I was like, am I feeding you too much, or like, what's going on? Well, last week, Monday, on the day of the eclipse, she had three kittens in that heated cat house. And
how cozy for her.
I know. I'm glad that she claimed it, and I'm glad she had them somewhere safe. So immediately moved them inside. I used the dog crate that we got when Little Man showed up and needed to be on crate rest. And I put her in there with the kittens, and she's been living in my office. The kittens are growing like weeds. I've got 8 cats in my house right now.
Oh my God.
So my cat lady prophecy has been fulfilled.
Oh my gosh.
It's been amazing and wonderful to watch these little guys so far. They're only a week and a half old at this point, but they're like humongous for their age. Like, I keep googling kitten weight, and they're like 2 to 3 week old size. I'm like, you guys are the best kittens ever. Like, the mom is so good. Like, she's taking such good care of them. I weigh them every day to make sure they're eating enough, and they are.
Wait, do you have a cat scale?
Yeah. So, well,
of course she does. What are you
I have
about?
It's a baby scale for cats.
I have a baby scale, yes. But I use my baking scale with a little bowl and a towel.
Cute!
To weigh the babies, because they're so little, and I weigh them in grams, and the biggest one is 300 grams right now. And one eye is open on the biggest one. So that's kind of where they're at right now. So she's right behind me right now, escaping from her kittens, cleaning her chest. Yeah.
She's like, I'm fine. It's just leave it. I'm fine.
She's literally laying on her back, cleaning her chest right now. It's so funny. But the mom is so sweet. Like, she's such a good mom. She's so sweet, and she's talkative because she's a tortie. Like, she's yowling at me all the time. You'll probably hear her at some point. But she nurses them nonstop, and they're just getting real fat and happy. And taking care of Bear when he was little was such a pain in the ass because he didn't have a mom, right? So I had to feed him. I had to rub his butt so he would pee, and she does all that stuff for me. So I don't really have to do anything. And it's been super distracting. I'm not getting any work done because every time they start to cry, I just turn around and like watch them and like, what's going on in there? And I pick them up every day and I play with them. And I think I have adopters lined up for most of them. And actually somebody wants the mom too, which I was really worried about because I don't want to put her back outside. She's super friendly and personable, talkative. She loves to sit on your lap. Like, she's a sweet, sweet, sweet cat. And I don't want to have to put her back outside. So my housekeeper's mom wants to take her.
Oh, you wouldn't. I know.
No, that. But I also don't want you 5 cats. Wouldn't. Like, that's
weird that the adopter is named Heredith Van Marn.
I know. But I'll do, you know, if that falls through, I'll figure something out. She's not going to go back outside. But if you're in the Metro Detroit area, hit me up. I got a bunch of cats. Please take them from me.
Or if you're not, we'll get Jeremy to drive to Detroit, pick up the cats, bring them to you.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, he'll do it.
I assume, Meredith, that you can choose one of the amazing pictures for this.
And oh, we'll yeah.
use it for the... Yeah, so you just tell me which one you want to use for the show picture this
I took
week,
some and... really good ones today. One of them has one eye open, so maybe that one.
Winky, got it.
Yep.
Oh, no, wait. Did we talk about the names?
No, I haven't. So you can't tell their genders yet, and not that I really care, but so we've come up with, since they
it's
were born
2024,
on... I know,
you know that,
I
right?
know.
You can name them...
Since they were born on Eclipse Day, that's what we named the mom Celeste. And
I like that.
Like Gregory came up with the name Umbra, which means shadows, for the darkest one. And then there's Anti-Umbra and Penumbra. So like they could be Penny or Ann or Andy or something like that. So it's a little too soon to determine what they are, but I think we can come up with names for all of them that are based on celestial bodies.
Adorable.
You're telling me you can't see a little cat dong?
No, you really can't. I mean, not quite yet. They're too little. Believe me, I Googled it and I was like, I'm spending too much time looking at cat genitals. I don't like this. I'm just going to wait until they're older.
But they can sex like hamsters and things. Those are
I know.
Really little.
I know. Everybody says you have to wait like 6 weeks and I'm like, eh. I don't know what that.
If I remember correctly from the movies we watched for this road trip, this will not be the last time we were squinting to see genitals today.
Nope. All right. So, Hillary, what's up with Rory becoming Bobby?
Well, okay. So we watched, whatchamacallit, we watched Chinatown a couple weeks ago. And this past weekend, we watched All the President's Men. So we're watching just all of Bobby's, you know, favorite movies. And I did tell...
Chinatown's not one of my favorite movies. It's just one of my favorite movies to reference because it's so easy. No. All the President's Men is legitimately one of my top five favorite movies.
I told Rory, I said, this is one of Bobby's favorite movies. And he just kept referencing you the whole time. Oh, Bobby really like, what's Bobby's favorite part? I'm like, I don't know. I haven't dug that deep into it. So yes, Rory and I watched All the President's Men. We did have to split it up into two nights. Because it's a pretty
very long
movie, and it's a lot. Like, I was getting tired. I mean, it was like later at night, and I was like, I'm getting tired. It's just kind of quiet. But what I love that I'm instilling into my son, like, there's whatever. I mean, kids are who they are, and parenting has some stuff to do with it. But sometimes you're like, I don't know where this kid is. But he's such a little film nerd, and I was like so excited because first of all, he was like, the acting is very naturalistic in this. And actually, as I was watching, I was like, the acting is really naturalistic, like especially Dustin Hoffman. I was like, he really is. And then he was like, sometimes you can notice when the politicians are lit, like how they're lit, they're like half lit, and that means that they're telling like half truths. And I was like, oh my God, are you in my American film class in like 1998? Like, it's such a, you know, college kid way of like, the director meant this and this, but we really liked it. I mean, I had to explain some stuff to him, obviously, because like I said, when you're watching it, I think even like my parents more so, like they could get all the references more easily than like we could, because we just weren't, you know, it wasn't second nature to us as it was to them. It would be like us watching something about, you know, Monica Lewinsky. Like, we were so embedded in that world that you're like, oh yeah, I know who that is. And I know who that is. But some of the stuff gets lost to time a little bit, but he really liked it. I mean, now he's kind of obsessed with Richard Nixon. So we'll see where this goes.
And so, I mean, this totally tickles me about him. Like, the idea of your 9-year-old walking around in his cinematic history as the Godfather in Chinatown and All the President's Men. Does he like kid movies too?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and he's seen all of the, like, the Marvel movies. I don't know if you call those kid movies as much, but, and he's seen, like, we watched Back to the Future together, and we went and saw Willy Wonka together. You know, he'll see some of those. It's not like he's like, I'm over the childish games. Although I came down today, and like when I came home from work, Dave was watching the new Roadhouse with Jake Gyllenhaal, and Rory was like in there. And I'm like, should he be watching this? Because they're just dropping F-bombs the whole time. He was like, he's not paying attention. It's fine. So we sort of ruined Rory. Like, it just, he's kind of, what I mean, there. Like, if a new Sonic came out, he would definitely want to see it. But, like, he doesn't want to see, like I said last week, Kung Fu Panda 4. He's kind of a little bit over that. But, you know, he's, yeah, he likes it. But he's, yeah, his brain is, I don't know. I don't know where his brain is. It's whatever. He's just.
Well, like, really, what did they not tell in Kung Fu Panda 1, 2, and 3 that still needs to be told in 4?
I don't know. I mean, at this point, when we go see things in the theater, I think they're just angling to get, you know, popcorn, like, or whatever, you know. They serve popcorn, pizza, milkshakes, like the whole runs the gamut there. But yeah, it was sort of fun. I told him to think of something else. I'm like, think of something else that you want to watch that's, you know, that we could watch together. I mean, I'll watch anything with them, but now I'm trying to think, like, Back to the Future was a fun one to watch, and Major League was a really fun one to watch. Again, that was a little bit like,
yeah, it's just
mildly inappropriate.
Has not aged well either.
No, but it's still,
parts of it has not aged well.
No, it's still really fun, but you're just like, ooh. I mean, yeah. And he was like, why are they, why is that guy dressed like that? You know, like all the Indian stuff. Yeah, he was just sort of like, I mean, kids are smart enough to kind of know now, like that. Oh, actually, the one thing, okay, side note, this is just all about Rory, but he's been like really interested in SNL. So he's been like YouTubing SNL stuff. And he was talking to me about like popular SNL movies. He's like, you know, there's really only been like two popular SNL movies. I'm like, okay, tell me what they are. And he's like, the Blues Brothers. And I'm like, yeah, that's not for me, but like, whatever. I know that there's a fan base for it. And the other one obviously is like one of my top favorite movies of all time, Wayne's World. And I was like, well, maybe we'll watch that. But then he said, what is It's Pat about? And I was like, I can't get into It's Pat. Like, I was like, it was just a time. He was like, they were just making fun of this person for like not knowing what their gender was. And I was like, it was the 90s. I don't know how to explain it. It was very funny at the time, but it is really not funny anymore. And I can't explain it. It was really popular. And now it seems like just a bad idea. And he was like, okay. I'm like, let's just move on.
But do they get the $15 men's haircut or the $20 women's haircut?
I mean, listen, it's a commentary on double standards. Yeah, let's talk about dry cleaning for a second. Jesus Christ, I don't do dry cleaning because it's so expensive for women. Like my button-down shirt that needs to be dry cleaned, it's like $10 more expensive than Dave's. There's nothing different about it.
Just get the dry cleaning at home in your dryer thing.
Yeah,
that's what I do.
Yeah, I know.
Wait, what is this? I can dry clean at home?
Well, there's like steam stuff, right?
Yeah, it's called Dry-L, I think. It's like a dryer sheet, but it's got those horrible chemicals in it, and you put it in a special bag, and you can just throw it in your dryer.
Oh,
this is news to me.
Look into that. I know. And I don't do a lot of dry cleaning, to be honest. I have button-down shirt that I don't want to iron. That's what I get dry cleaning.
Well, it's just suits. Suits are the problem for me, but I probably can't do that in my home dryer.
Well, as long as you take them out and hang them up so they don't get wrinkly, like right away, it's fine.
Okay. Huh. All right. We learned something new.
Huh. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to roll in because we've got movies to talk about. I just wanted to mention, I keep having events on Sunday night and I can't handle it. But on Sunday night, this past Sunday, I went to see Madonna. I kept saying that because I remembered like back in the day when you would see people in like Spain talk about Madonna, they would always be like, Madonna. Yes, I went to go see Madonna here in Austin with my friend Katie. It was really fun. But okay, a couple things. One, she goes on at 10. Well, it says she's supposed to go on at 8:30, but she goes on at 10:30. Why? I don't know. Because she's Madonna and she can, I guess.
Just say what time you're actually going to go on.
I'm like, I don't, like, just tell me so I can
so much.
Mentally. I mean, luckily she's been on tour long enough that, like, it like, everybody kind of knows about it. So you're like, okay, I'm just, like, mentally prepared for this. But apparently in some places she went on at midnight and she's getting sued because she's not honoring the day of the concert. So you're like, I bought my ticket for whatever day and you went on the next day.
So then what happens during this time? Like, the openers are finished.
Well,
right?
There's not really an opener. It's like,
oh,
there was like
better,
a DJ set kind of. And then Bob the drag queen is sort of her opener. But he like it's just sort of like announcing stuff. Like, he's kind of fun, but he's not really an open. It's not like he's doing music or anything. He's just a sort of like the, you know, like in charge of the whole, all the festivities. So whatever. I mean, we, luckily where she performed, it's this new, it's where the UT basketball plays and it's really nice. But they have like a sort of patio balcony area. So like almost everybody was out there because she also turns off the air conditioning in the venue. What? Or like turns it down, up, whatever. I mean, it was crazy. And I had heard this sort of that, like, she doesn't like air conditioning me on because she thinks it makes her sick, which, like, fine, whatever. But this is a crowd of mostly over 40 women and gay men. Like, this is what everybody is, like, perimenopausal.
No, it's because she's a senior citizen and she needs it to be, like, 80 degrees at all times.
I know. I mean, she really is. She's like,
Mom, don't listen to that.
She is, like, 65 years old. Now I'll say she sounded really good. I mean, Madonna is not somebody who I would say has like strong vocals ever. Like even when she was
younger. No, that's not her selling point. Never has been.
She did. I don't know. I'm sure she had some, you know, something sweetening up her vocals, but she sounded good. Like it, and it wasn't the track. Cause I, you know, all of these songs, I know it, that was what was so weird as I was like, God, like I know all these songs so well. They were just like a part of my childhood. She, like, Live to Tell is a song that I really do like. It's a pretty song, and she sang that really well. She sang Crazy for You, which is another, like, slower one that I like. Vogue was fantastic. But then, like, we were looking, my friend Katie and I were like, okay, we're leaving at midnight. Like, she won't be done, but we gotta, I gotta go to work tomorrow. I can't be out until 2 in the morning. So we were looking at the track list, like, okay, well, we can leave after this. And they're like, oh, you know, there's a song there that I kind of want to hear. But what she would do is she would play like the opening chords to a song and then move to another song. So you're like, I'm not even sure if she's actually going to play whatever it was. So she played like the ones that I really want. Like I heard Express Yourself, love that. I heard Like a Prayer, which I think some people were a little, I mean, it was a lot of hunky Jesuses like sort of hanging out. Her dancers were fantastic. Her dancing on the other hand was, again, she's like 65. So her dancing was like limited. She would do some songs that I was like, why are you like, you played a snippet of something that I really like and then you're playing all of Die Another Day, a song that nobody likes. Like, this is not a good Bond theme, this is a dumb Bond theme. But anyway, it was good, it was fun. Katie and I decided we're gonna stay. We knew it was coming through Don't Cry For Me Argentina. And then we were like, all right, we're out of here. Let's go. And she did well. It was fun. I was just like, I got home. We left at like 12:15. We had to walk back to our cars. I was home by 1:00 and I was, you know, but then when you get home, you're kind of like hyper a little bit. So I'm like, I'm going to take a shower. I need to like kind of, but I wasn't really in bed until like 1:45 and like asleep probably by 2:00. And I had to be up by 6:30, 7:00 the next day. And I was just like, I was fucking wrecked. I cannot do that. I can't. How did I did that as a teen? I mean, I just had more energy, but, and we were supposed to go to another thing on Tuesday that didn't start until 9:30. It was Kathy Griffin. And she was like, do you mind if we don't go? And I was like, it's totally fine. I am totally okay. I like Kathy Griffin, but I am totally okay not going to another late night event because mama can't handle it. So yeah, Madge was fun. If you're a fan, I mean, the thing about her is like her music was everywhere, so you'll know stuff. It just, but she also like kind of goes on tangents where I looked at Katie and I said, I don't know what she's talking about right now. It's not like she was talking about like Gaza or something. It was like, we have to love all the children, and it was like, oh, okay, you know, just sort of like, okay,
well, that's
and
a then, that's a politically safe thing to say. True. Right.
Yeah, no, true.
It's not like she said all the unborn children or something.
No. And, you know, she did some stuff about AIDS. And I mean, it was good. It was just, a Sunday is tough. If it had been a Saturday, I probably would have stayed the whole time and enjoyed it. But Sunday is a tough time. So, yeah, that was my Madge review.
Yeah, I don't know how I used to work until 11:30, go to the bar, close it down, and then go to school at 8:00 in the morning.
No idea.
I used to do that regularly.
Yeah, it's so, I'm like, I would be tired, but not like that. There's that tired where you're like, I'm tired, but whatever, like, keep going. And then there's the tired where you're like, I can't exist in the world right now. Yeah. I need to go to bed. Yeah, she did play Borderline. She played Holiday. She played a lot of the early stuff because, you know, not that she's the first person to start this, but like the eras kind of thing, I think for artists that have been around a lot, they're like, oh, okay, well, this is like a good way to categorize stuff. She didn't really play it like timeline wise, but she did, you know, she was like, I'm telling a story. It might not be linear and it also might be boring, but stick with me. And I'm like, okay, I guess. But yeah, she played a lot.
Set those expectations, I guess.
Oh, seriously. But yeah, it was fun. And Trixie Mattel, who from Drag Race, was like the kind of guest judge for the Vogue section. But yeah, it was fun. It was, you know, it was Madonna. She's wacky. So fun party time.
I think that means it's time for the mailbag.
Yes.
So our Facebook question of the week last week is, what's your favorite pretzel shape? We got,
you know, we have the hard-hitting journalism here.
We really do.
Lane says peanut butter-filled pretzel nuggets, and then a link to the...
I think, yeah, it depends on the brand for sure.
Yes, yes.
Lane links a very specific Utz. Is that how you say it? Utz snacks?
I say Utz.
I think I Utz, but
Utz.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, those are great. I think the Trader Joe's ones are really good too.
Mm-hmm.
Rosemary says, I like a rod and I'm picky and that I'm addicted to Clancy's pretzels rods from Aldi. Dan,
you know, we don't have an Aldi here and I really hear all about, no, we don't.
Wow.
And I'm like, is this the HEB like monopoly or something?
Kind of. Like, it can be really hit or miss.
The place that charges you a quarter for the shopping cart. I don't
yeah,
know.
But you get it back.
Lending the quarter, right.
Yeah.
So what is the quarter accomplishing then, that you return it?
Yeah, to make sure you don't nobody steals the cart.
Right, to deposit.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
You sound skeptical. I've seen a thing you can put on your keys that mimics the shape of a quarter, so you can slot it in there instead of a quarter.
Hmm. Ooh, hacks.
Yeah, exactly.
Daniel says, pretzels aren't necessarily a go-to snack, but I'll destroy a bag of Snyder's of Hanover honey, mustard, and onion pretzel pieces in no time. Also, I do love a sweet almond soft pretzel from Auntie Anne's when I'm in an airport every now and then. And someone brought in a large pretzel rods last week to work, and I'd be lying if I said I didn't have two or seven of those over the couple days they were out. Honestly, it was nice to have something snacky that wasn't cookies or sweets I don't need. Yeah.
Two or seven over a couple of days.
I know. Yeah.
Two or seven over a couple of
hours. Yeah, seriously.
Self-restraint. Carolyn says, I have to confess, I'm not a big fan of pretzels. I don't like thick ones as they have dense, dry centers. Long rods often make me tired of the flavor by the end. Little thin ones can be too salty. The flavor blasted bits are okay in small doses. However, my husband loves pretzels. We recently found a shape that is good compromise, rings or circles. They aren't too thick or dry or salty.
We didn't even touch on rings.
Yeah, that's a whole subgenre.
Yeah, it really is. Catherine says, OG Twisted.
And we didn't talk about Twisted.
No, no, I know.
Yeah.
Amanda says, not so much a shape, but the butter snaps flavor are my current favorite. They're like little hashtags.
Yep.
Fred says, cigarillo shaped. And Morgan says, a meme that is a witch saying, cure anxiety with pretzels.
I like the underneath, though. It says, that little comment says, thanks, pretzel witch.
Very good. And then we got a couple of voicemails in regards to IUD talk. The first one is from listener Renee about their IUD experience. So let's play that.
Hello, Tishy fam. This is Renee Leon in Aurora, Colorado. And I'm listening to you gals and Bobby talk about IUD. And I'm just like, I'm one of those rare lucky people. Maybe people don't want to hear this from me. Well, I guess fast forward. After my second child, I had an IUD put in, like within a month or whatever. So obviously cervix a little stretched out and fine because I had two natural vaginal births. And so the second one, they put an IUD in. and I didn't feel it. So it was fine. And at that time, it was only good for 6 years. And I did not have a period for 6 years. And it was magical. Then when they're like, yeah, you know, you should probably be careful. It's not going to be super effective. They took it out. And then I just didn't have anything for a while. And then as I'm entering, as I have perimenopause kicking up and my cycles are all over the place, a friend of mine was a nurse, and she said, maybe just get an IUD again. And I thought, you know what? I was really impulsive, and I did it. But the reason I hadn't gotten one yet is because I was worried it was going to hurt so bad, because this was not immediately post-labor. And guys, I was expecting it to be crazy. And weirdly enough, I do have a high tolerance for pain, but this was like a zero pain situation. There was slight discomfort with a pinch where she numbed me, I believe, my cervix. And then she was like, you know, you're going to feel a cramp. And then I was like, nothing. I felt nothing. I was fine. And then later that day, I had some cramping, slight cramping, but it was so minor. And that's it. So when they say that it's not that big a deal, for me, it was not a big deal. My sister, she passed out. So, but yeah, she doesn't typically have a high pain tolerance like I do, but I'm serious. Like there was, it was nothing. So I don't think they're 100% lying, but they should be, I believe the training could be improved to include, there's a spectrum of responses. I guess I'm just one of the lucky ones. So just wanted to pipe in. I guess it sounds like I'm bragging. Okay, so I'm bragging. I got super lucky, ladies.
Bragger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the part that got me was the part where she referred to some sort of numbing agent or anesthetic. Yes. And I was like, I don't remember
that.
Yeah,
what are you talking about?
What kind of gold star doctor are you going to? You are bragging, Renee. Gave you something?
No, seriously.
So I had a copper IUD placed after I had my liver surgery and couldn't be on hormonal birth control anymore, and it was so painful. I actually fainted on the table, and they used smelling salts to wake me up. Oh my god.
Was it 1911?
I know.
It was in 1914.
So I remember it.
Am I holding up?
It smelled like serious ammonia, and I woke up going, "What the fuck?" It was horrible, and the whole experience was horrible. And I had it taken out a couple of months later because I couldn't stand it. So good on you, Renee.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to have I don't know, testimony from the other end of the pain spectrum on that, so that we know that it is possible to not be an awful experience.
It was horrible for me.
Let me just jump in here to say, speaking of pain scales, beautiful transition, Anne.
Yeah, so Anne has another take on the pain scale, so let's listen to that voicemail too.
Hey, it's Anne. I'm at a railroad crossing waiting for a train, so I'm going to roll out this idea about the pain scale. I think that the key thing is, how often are you thinking about the pain, and can you think about anything else? Like Hillary, I had a precipitous childbirth, and part of that whole experience was that I could not ever sign the liability release form, to the extent that finally the nurse looked at my husband and said, "Are you guys married?" And he answered yes, and she shoved the clipboard at him to have him sign the paper, because I couldn't keep it together long enough to scribble my name on a form. So that's my idea. What do you think? Okay, bye.
Yeah, just ask someone else.
I don't know that I've ever had that kind of pain where, like, I couldn't concentrate on anything else. Maybe I need to have a kid and I'll be able to talk then.
Or a pseudo secret, not real kidney stone.
Exactly.
Because that, no, there was no focusing on anything except laying on the bathroom floor. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's so subjective that it's hard. I do like, it's like, I don't know. Yeah, it's like, you know, in exercise when they're like, what's your perceived like exertion or whatever? Like, can you talk through it? Can you have a conversation? Can you say a couple of words or whatever? But that's, I don't know. It's so subjective. But I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. What's my seven? What's your seven? How do I know that my seven is right?
You have to use that face, you know, the frown, smiley to frowny face thing.
Yeah.
I'm sad.
How sad are you?
Are you, well, this sucks sad or...
Well, yeah. And to rekindle an old conversation, a New York 5 is like a Buffalo 7. So
gross. I mean, when I was in the hospital after my liver surgery and they kept asking me that and I was in the worst pain of my life, I was like, 7.
Right, because you always got to leave room at the
like,
top.
It could always yes. be worse. I was like,
there's
it could
always room
be worse.
For the lack of improvement.
Yep.
I know. You're like, I don't want to be like dramatic about this, but I mean, it's my personal 10, but I don't know.
They were also like, we can't give you any more pain medicine or you'll stop breathing. So I was like, okay.
Then why are you asking me?
Then just give me the most that you can.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Can I have a knife to cut out the problem? Yeah. I feel like that's the point I was reaching.
Well, they took my intestines out of my body and rearranged them, and I could feel them moving around. So that was what hurt the most.
Brutal.
Yep.
Oof. Oof.
All right, so that then. Was the mailbag.
So wait, your intestines, when they took them out, were they the OG twist or were they like in a...
They were waffle fry shape.
You know, whatever they say that how long your intestines are, 27 miles or whatever the number is. How do they get them back in there the right way?
They don't.
Like, you could never get something
just,
back
they
into
just
the box.
Throw them in and let
no,
your body
just,
figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. They threw them in and yeah. I had to rearrange them myself and it sucked. Yeah.
Well, I don't like that.
No.
Yeah. I just, the inside of you is just one of those mazes where you have to not hit the dead ends.
Mm-hmm.
And... speaking of Miss Frizzle's magic school bus.
Is that our cue to move on to medium talk?
I think it is.
Let's do it, guys. The finale. I'm calling it the finale. Despite Bobby's skepticism that we may want to go more places and talk about more movies.
Well, I'm just
He's
saying.
Going to Guam.
Like
Puerto Rico.
Like House Hunters. We will quickly learn that there's a TC Cinema Road Trip International.
Okay, that may be, because I would like to talk about the Bourne movies sometime.
Yes.
Ooh.
But as far as this project goes, we are wrapping this up. Sure. You know, this is what I wanted to get to all these 4 years, is this 100% completion rate. Let's not talk about Nevada. and we're there. We're there.
On time and under budget, except... Except we're late and there was no budget.
Right. So we have made it to Alaska and Hawaii. Yes, they're not geographically close to one another, but, you know.
They're kindred spirits, I think.
Yeah.
And honestly, there weren't that many Hawaii movies. You know, sort of a weird thing. I thought there would be so many more Hawaii movies that I wanted to talk
the
about.
The fact that we picked one that doesn't have Adam Sandler in it was a good start.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I'm like, should somebody have picked like Lilo and Stitch or something? Like there's
50 First Dates or something
about it. But,
huh.
And obviously we weren't going to pick the Jason Segel one.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah. Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Because... two of those cast members make me actively want to wool.
Yeah.
And frankly did at the time, and I feel very justified
yeah.
In feeling that way now. So we're doing Alaska and Hawaii. We were talking before we started. We've really failed spectacularly to consider the breadth of cinema. sorry, Jack. Jack, our cinema historian, will no doubt have thoughts on our failure, but... our movies are within a 12-year period, basically encompassing the 2000s. So, yep. I don't know. It's what speaks to us because that's where we came from. So let's do it. Let's talk about Alaska. Let's talk about Hawaii. Let's start with Bobby, who I think, you know, really chose a masterpiece
of
cinema.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is one that Rory also did watch and loved.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, Rory is turning into preteen me, which is a good start. And by the way, you can tell him my, I mean, I have many favorite scenes in All the President's Men. And in general, just the sound of the typewriters and all the cigarette smoke in the newsroom.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But obviously the scene where they pull back in the Library of Congress as they're just going through those
cards.
I said,
look. And he was like, okay. I'm like, look how cool.
Yeah, they didn't have a drone back then, so they had to put somebody up there to
crane.
Do that. Yep. Yeah, the crane shot, just like Chinatown.
I do not volunteer.
No.
And that great Frank Shire. No, Frank Shire, the music.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. So anyway,
yeah, I think so.
My movie from 1999, almost the 2000s, Mystery Alaska. Because when I think of Alaska and I think of movies, I think to myself, Northern Exposure's not a movie. And then immediately following that, I think hockey, because of course I do. And then I think of movies that I saw when I was probably too young to see them. Well, actually, I mean, I was an early teen at that point, so probably just the right age for some of the humor in Mystery Alaska. Some of it definitely doesn't age well. The general presence of Hank Azaria is never a good thing, it seems. Although, I do love Brockmire.
Shattered Glass.
Yes.
He's amazing.
Yes, he is.
No, he's great. He's just, you know, I don't think it's the his fault that Apu got canceled on The Simpsons. I think it's just that when they started doing The Simpsons in the late 80s, early 90s, it wasn't an issue to have him voicing characters that weren't white. Anyway, I don't know exactly what compelled me to pick Mystery Alaska, except that I vaguely remember having seen it and thinking, oh, I love a hockey movie. Love a sports movie. I'm usually the guy who brings the hockey and sports movies. Directed by Jay Roach, who, if you aren't familiar, has this wonderful little run of these dumb movies because he also directed Austin Powers, Meet the Parents, Dinner for Schmucks, and then randomly, and The Campaign, and then randomly Trumbo and Bombshell.
Yes.
It's like there's this hard right turn. Well, maybe hard left turn. I don't know.
Hard turn
to serious movies.
He directed this movie. He was also married to Susanna Hoffs. That's like what I think of him.
Yes.
From the Bengals. I think they're divorced now, but he also directed a movie. Hold on. Let me see if he actually did direct this. Yeah. He directed a movie called Charlie Bartlett, which I've never seen. But the guy that I dated right before Dave, who was a real asshole, wrote that movie. And I remember he was like, Jay Roach is going to direct it. So anytime I see Jay Roach's name, I'm always like, ugh. But
poor Jay Roach.
I know. And
dated by association.
I know. But I did love Austin Powers. That was
everyone did.
But yeah, I thought it was maybe the funniest movie I'd ever seen when I saw it. I was like, anyway, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm just picking up because now I think I can go out with some Bengals.
Yeah.
Or the Bangs, as they were originally known. I don't know that I have a ton of commentary on this. I mean, it's a surprisingly young-looking Russell Crowe. It's Hank Azaria.
Yeah.
It's Mary McCormick, also, in an earlier to me role in her acting career. I'm pretty sure Colm Meaney looks the same age for about 30 years in the stuff that he did.
Oh,
and then
100%.
One day just woke up looking old. Of course, you know, I always look at him and I
Lolita
think of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Lolita Davidovich. I always, I don't know why the name sound of her name always made me laugh. And this is like the role she always played, was sort of like femme fatale.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, sexy lady.
So the very quick summary of the plot is in this little tiny town in Alaska, there's a much revered pickup pond hockey game every Saturday that all the locals gather for, and all the players are really good because they all grew up on skates playing these games. It always kind of irritated me, this culture, a little bit as a quasi-Canadian, that I wasn't born on skates and I'm a terrible ice skater. And I should be good because it should be in my blood, and yet it is not. I come from a very Canadian family, and basically none of them are hockey players, just for some reason. I'm left out of it. But you've got like the classic sports cliches of the young player coming up and learning, joining the team. You've got the old vet who's aging out. There's a lot of Bull Durham vibes there, which always make me really happy. And then the guy who grew up in town and then left, played by Hank Azaria, writes a story about this game, gets a Sports Illustrated story, turns into a TV spectacle in the not ESPN network, because I'm sure ESPN didn't pay for the rights to put their names in it, wants to come put an exhibition game up between the Rangers, the New York Rangers, and the local players. And the local players band together to make a game of it. Spoiler alert, they don't win, but they get really close. They earn a bunch of respect. They all learn how to play together and not fight and moan and all that. Lots of stupid jokes. A little bit of comeuppance for some of the stupid jokes, which is at least somewhat redeeming in moments. Overall, just a long, very cliche late 90s sports comedy movie. I laughed probably more than I should have at some of the jokes. And it definitely felt like a movie I would have enjoyed when I first saw it when I was an early teen.
I have a couple comments. One, Rory did cry when the guy died. Spoiler alert. The guy that went to speak really? About it. Yes.
The fat town lawyer.
Yes.
He would not have won that case.
No.
I'm sorry. Well, because that speech he gave was stupid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the players union would have been like, yeah, we don't want to play this fucking game. Like, it's not in our contract. Go away.
Yeah, there's no way.
Two, I've really, really never gotten it with Russell Crowe. Like, I guess I could objectively, not now, but I guess I could have objectively seen, like, well, I guess he's a good looking guy. I actually do think he's really cute in this movie. And
he's very cute in this movie.
I think this is the first movie I remember hearing about with him. I was like, I'd maybe heard of him, but I was not really like, it's not like I watched Romper Stomper or any of his sort of earlier things.
Well, I just looked it up. So this is post LA Confidential, yeah, which is what the first thing I saw him in was.
I guess I just, and I know he was in like that one with Denzel Washington where it was like virtual reality, virtuosity. Mm-hmm. And I think I was just sort of like, I don't know this guy. I don't know who he is. But in this, I'm like, he is cute. He's not exactly charming. And honestly, Mary McDonald, I'm like, yeah, girl, like yell at him. He's being a dick right now. Mm-hmm. Like, she hasn't done anything. She's just talking to her ex-boyfriend. She's not like making out with him. And she wants to leave this small town. She's there for you. And you're being like a butthead right now about it, but whatever.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of Russell Crowe one way or the other. It's odd to see him try in a movie.
Yes.
I feel like he hasn't tried for a long time.
Yes.
So, like, he is making an effort, and he's, you know, he's doing the American accent.
Yes. And to varying degrees of success.
And, you know, he is kind of cute.
He is.
Like, I looked at him, and I was like, oh, yeah, back then he was sort of attractive, I guess.
Yeah, no, I know that's exactly, I was like, oh, I get it now. This is what people saw in him, was this sort of like kind of lunky, hunky, stoic guy, I guess.
With a little bit of like sensitivity underneath.
When we were kind of messaging about this as Rory and I were watching it, I was like, well, my son has now learned what premature ejaculation is. And Anne was like, I really want to talk about the varying tones in this.
For all that, Bobby, you describe it as like a genial sports comedy, there's also some parts where it gets really serious. Yes, all of a sudden.
Yeah, yes.
Like when they're having like Russell Crowe and Mary, what's her name, McCormick, are having the conversation about, you know, misogyny in Alaska and how hard it's been for her and how she hoped that their children would be boys and not girls.
Yep.
So that they wouldn't. I was like, whoa, this is a different movie. And then there's like the actual casual misogyny of Ron Eldard in all his scenes. And I'm like, well, now, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We're trying to have this all the ways. Yes. Here, like Ron Eldard wants it, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, Ron Eldard.
God, I liked him so much on ER.
Yeah, I know.
Chef on ER, and he was just so cute. Mm-hmm. And so sweet. And I'm not going to watch him in something like this where he's just an asshole.
He Bobby, calls some on. Girl
horn dog.
His nickname is Skank. I don't understand how the local ladies haven't figured this one out.
1999.
Yeah.
And it is interesting, and I use interesting loosely, because they, you know, he's this horn dog hockey player, and he sort of seems to be almost like a total idiot. And then they cut to him like teaching his third grade class, And the gag is that he's having the third graders read the article that was written about the team and the parts about him. But I'm like, this is a different character.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
This is not the same person. Yeah. The guy who teaches third grade and the guy, you know, who's like, fat women are gross.
But I'll still fuck them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I had a fun time watching it. You know, I like a sports movie. I always, even when it's like kind of dumb. I'm glad that they didn't win because that would have been kind of dumb if they actually had won.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. There's only so far we can stretch this.
Yes. It was funny though. Rory was like, this is the one person we haven't really talked about it. Rory was like, what does that guy do? He seems like this mysterious character. I don't understand his point in this movie. And I was like, yeah, me either. And that's Burt Reynolds. It's like, what's going on here? Why is he doesn't seem like he fits in with this aesthetic. I mean, I guess he's supposed to be fancier, sort of, but he just is this. I'm like, was he there for 2 days? And they were like, just film these couple of scenes and then we'll get you out of here. Yeah.
Well, he's extremely inappropriately dressed.
Yes.
For Alaska weather.
Yes.
I'll say, I mean, that's a beautiful, like, camel hair trench coat kind of deal.
Well, he is the judge, after all. So they gave him a coat that looks like robes. I kind of got that.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Nobody would be out there without a hat.
No.
That's right. All I'm saying. I don't care, even if you are Burt Reynolds or whatever.
I guess it's that it was just.
But why was he so mad? Why was he so mad at hockey?
So mad.
Well, he didn't make it. I mean, that was the thing. He was a college 2A or something and didn't go past that. Like, he never had a pro career. So my guess is that he was just bitter that he couldn't hack it.
But he had coached before.
Yes.
But now he was refusing to coach. And I'm not sure why, because he would have had to coach his kid or.
Well, he knew in his mind. They were just going to be a laughing stock on national television.
And he wasn't going to get involved
right.
in
he
this
He didn't want
circus.
To support that. Hmm. So I could follow that plot line, though I don't think it was written for Burt Reynolds. I think it was written for distinguished-ish older actor of some caliber yes. we can get, and that ended up being Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds.
Sure,
so,
yeah.
I'm trying to think of, if I were recasting that, Sean Connery.
Maybe. Oh, but Sean Connery could never do the accent.
Well,
he just is like, I'm not even trying.
The accents are pretty all over the place in here anyway.
Yeah, Cole Meany, I was like, his lilt is coming out. He's like, oh, help me. My Irish wants to come out. I did ask Dave. I was like, do you know who Cole Meany is? And he looked at me like, of course I do. Like, this, he's in my blood. Of course I know who this man is. I was like, I don't know.
He's beamed me up so many times.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, just to go back to Skank Martin for a second, I just wanted to make sure I got the wording on the quote right. The line, I play hockey and I fornicate because those are the two most fun things to do in cold weather. It's pretty great.
Yep. No, I mean, it was fun, funny. And yes, Rory channeled preteen Bobby and really enjoyed it.
Well, good. That's all I care about. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have any deeper read on this movie. Just when I think of Alaska, I think of people playing pond hockey, basically. So that was I think about what the fishing, you know, port activity and pond hockey. So that was it. Yep. Check that box for me.
I'm a little vague as to why it was such a big deal that they were going to play them on a pond versus on a rink, but it has to do with the dimensions or it has to do with the quality of the ice?
I can think of two things. One, the black ice versus the white ice of a rink means that it's a little harder to see the puck. And the open boundaries of pond hockey or broomball or anything else played in that kind of setting, there are no boards. You can just go out as wide as you want. It's sort of like Olympic hockey rinks are already wider than NHL rinks. And in pond hockey, there's no checking on the boards because there are no boards.
Right. You can't like smash into somebody and send them tumbling over into the stands.
So
it seems like a good thing to me.
It rewards skating skill and ability because there are no boundaries. See, it's basically bumper bowling versus no bumper bowling. So yeah. God, I gotta learn how to skate. I threw my back out, you know,
I don't know how
thinking
to skate.
The other day. But
I hate to say this, Bobby, but I think it's a little bit late. You know,
I had ice skates. I tried.
Ice skating is It's not something you can pick up later in life, I think.
Yeah, no.
You're going to break your legs.
Yeah.
Throw your back
break
out.
A hip.
I mean, just...
Or just get a walker and, you know, one of those ice skating walkers. I mean, they're real things.
I don't think they'll let you play beer league hockey with a walker.
Well, you can't start at beer league hockey.
Right. I learned to skate when I was real little because my dad would shovel off the snow on our cottage lake and we would skate and my brother would like make mazes and make us play hockey with him That was him just like practicing his slap shot at our faces.
Right. He played hockey.
Yes,
right.
He did. Right. But I played hockey when I was like 10 on a city league and I was the only girl and I was like a head taller than everybody else. And they made me play in figure skates.
Oh.
Because I was a girl.
Come on.
Yeah. So I learned to play hockey with figure skates. I eventually learned how to.
That means that you're better than they are because like. That's bullshit.
It is bullshit, but like I didn't learn to stop properly, because I had the you've got your toe pick on figure skates and not on hockey skates. So I don't feel like I can play properly. I don't know if I could play in hockey skates anymore or even skate in hockey skates. I feel like I was
I skated a bit. It was a disservice. Like a kid in a preteen and. I just say my center of gravity was always too high for me to be a good skater. I just never was really very good at it.
I can't skate. When I found out Dave could skate backwards, I was like, you can? He was like, yeah, I can skate backwards. And I was like, that's amazing. I can't skate.
I mean, I could at one time, but not very fast.
Yeah, no, I can't. I mean, I could skate-ish, but then I'm like, my ankles hurt, I'm cold. And then I quit.
Well, that's the reality of skating.
Yep. All right.
Well, let's move on.
I think that's it for the 90s.
Yep. Speaking of tonal shifts, let's move from the genial sports comedy with weird undertones to the stylish sort of Scandi noir, because it is actually a remake of a Swedish movie. We're going to 2002's Insomnia, starring Al Pacino and Robin Williams. This is my pick. And I did see it in the theater back in the day, and it's always kind of stuck in my mind. Yeah. So I brought it back up again. It's one of Christopher Nolan's early movies. I think he had done Memento at that time. Mm-hmm. And this, Hillary, you've listened to the Blank Check song, I'm sure.
Yes.
But this remains like one of or the only movie that he's directed that he didn't write in some way, shape, or form. So it's kind of a departure for him. And honestly, as much as I like what Christopher Nolan does, this is a lot more straightforward.
It is.
Most of his
it is. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yep. And so the thumbnail sketch of this is Al Pacino is this world-weary Los Angeles detective who gets called up to help with a murder in Night Mute, Alaska, which is either close to or above the Arctic Circle, I guess. And it is summer there, which means the sun basically never sets.
It's so freaky.
Yep. Which is why, like, this is a movie that... says Alaska to me so much because you couldn't film it anywhere else except Scandinavia. But the American version, you could not film anywhere else because that lack of darkness is so important. And you know, it's a neat little reverse from your normal noir type movies where everything is cloaked in darkness. But anyway, so he goes up to Alaska because I guess he knows the police chief who used to be an LA cop.
Which that is like the one sort of like, I really like this movie a lot, but that was the one you're like, what?
How did that connection? Yeah, I agree.
Credibility.
Like an LA cop? Bit. Okay.
Goes to Alaska. But, you know, apparently he's just so legendary that young cop Hillary Swank did her police academy dissertation. Case study on him, and she's like a groupie of his. But the other reason that they have to get out of LA is because internal affairs is coming after him, and you know, he just wants to get out of the way for a while maybe and let things cool off and get out of the line of fire. And then I don't think it's a spoiler at all to talk about Robin Williams being the suspect
because it's
movie.
pretty It's like middle of the.
It's yeah, the yeah. reveal. Yeah. It's not like a Kaiser Soze kind of moment. No. Even though he enters fairly late.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Into the movie, like it's not like Robin Williams.
No.
Like yeah. he's built second.
I was going to say it wasn't like a surprise.
Well, you go into the movie being like, okay, this is Robin Williams doing a dramatic.
Yeah, exactly.
Role.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I did think it was interesting when he sat on that chair upside down, though.
And the movie is really like a sort of case study in these two men that are sort of mirror images of each other almost. And it's a lot about, I think we're encouraged to root for Al Pacino because he's the quote unquote good guy, even though he is a crooked cop. It's, you know, revealed later on that the reason that IA is looking into him, I mean, I don't even know if the, but at this point IA has something specific or if they're just digging, but there is a case where it was a guy who was a child murderer and he just knew he did it, but he couldn't get the evidence, so he planted it. And he even says the ends justify the means. And I just, you know, like this movie goes down a lot differently these days than it did 20 years ago, thinking about police corruption. And I was, you know, speculating there's probably a lot of that that goes on where the cops just know somebody's guilty and they can't they manufacture the evidence to make sure they do, and that's all just well and great until they manufacture it for somebody who didn't do something. And I think that's gross. That's the ends do not justify the means on that one. But so Al Pacino is really like, he's in this place, he can't sleep because it doesn't get dark, and he has this line about how good cops can't sleep because they're worried that they've missed something, and bad cops can't sleep because they feel guilty. And so the whole movie is us wondering, why can't he sleep? Is it because he's a good cop or because he's a bad cop?
Or because he's a cop at all.
Yeah. And right. Exactly. And to make matters worse, his partner is dealing with IA and is going to, you know, avoid jail time, I guess, and spill the beans. And so they're fighting about that. And then they're chasing who we will come to know as Robin Williams on the beach in the fog, in the pea soup fog, in the can't see 4 feet in front of you fog, running around, waving their guns around, which I'm like, I don't think this is in the police field manual.
So many guns in this movie.
I know.
So
and he
many
shoots
bullets.
His partner
by mistake. Sorry, I spoiled that. It's a 2002 movie. And then it's like, well, he didn't do it on purpose, but his partner was going to give him up. So there's some part of him that's relieved. And then the other part of him feels guilty. And Robin Williams, the bad guy, saw him or knows that he did it. And so then between the two of them, there's this cat and mouse. And now we're planting more evidence and running around and telling lies. And it's just not a great look for the cops in this. It's a really interesting movie, I think, because Al Pacino's character is trying to tell himself this bullshit about how he's a good person, and he doesn't believe
it. No, he doesn't
at
all.
End of the day.
Knows.
And that's why he can't sleep. And Robin Williams is telling himself also that he's a good person, but he's at the stage of his life where he's buying his own bullshit.
Yeah.
Every time he's like, I didn't intend to kill her. I didn't, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. She wasn't supposed to die kind of thing. Ugh. And so, yeah, it's an interesting, it's a stylish little thriller. Let's put it that way.
I in my like college days of being a film minor, I loved Memento, and I was very in on the like.
Oh God, I love Memento.
Loved it, and I was very in on the Christopher Nolan train. And I remember I was like really excited when this was coming out, but for whatever reason, I didn't see it, and I was just like, and then I just never saw it. I just never did, and so I was like, I was very excited when you chose this, and I really, really liked it a lot. I don't know, not a lot more. Later, Al Pacino is, you know, you get into like the devil's advocate of it all, and like he goes really big. Now he has moments of going really big in this, but he actually is relatively toned down compared to his later roles.
He sure makes you believe that he's tired.
Well, and he does a good job of being like tired, but not like I'm so tired. You know, it's not this kind of, it just is like that feeling of like I was talking about, like where you sort of feel crazy when you're tired, where you're like, I can't even.
Right.
And then it's like it builds upon itself. Like you can't, you're so tired that you can't sleep, sort of. But and I like that his name is Dormer, because isn't that like to, like, I know in Spanish to sleep is dormir. But what I did think was funny is whenever Robin Williams, and when Robin Williams does serious Robin Williams, he like has a certain tone of voice that's like, yep, it's serious, yep, Robin Williams time. And he kept saying Will, and I was like, God, it's so weird that his only like, he won an Oscar for saying Will all the time. And I was like, this is so like kind of confusing to me. The thing that I really took from listening to the Blank Check episode after this, and I think that is true, this, if thinking about this movie now, this would be a TV show, and I like it, yes, so much that it's a movie, because it, they would make it like 10 episodes, and it like, there's these little dangling parts, but like nothing really happens in one episode.
Yeah, it would be a
lot
mini
happens
series
in another. Yep. Yeah, and I like that it's this movie, and it's, you know, it's not even for, especially for a freaking Nolan movie, it's not very long. It's like 2 hours long, and it really like, it packs a lot into it. And I don't know, I really liked it. I mean, that's not like that intellectual to say, but I really liked it. I love Martin Donovan. He's not in it very much, but I always, he's a good, you know what I realized though? Wait. So not to spoil, I just wish Meredith's movie had somebody in this. Okay, so in Bobby's movie, there's Ron Eldred, right? He's from ER. This, it's Maura Tierney, who has, mm-hmm, a very small role, but she's good because Maura Tierney is always good.
Mm-hmm. Always.
And then in my movie, it's George Clooney. I'm like, we have an ER trifecta going on here.
It's actually all four.
Really?
Clooney is an executive producer on Into the Wild.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Anyway, yeah, no, besides that, I can never tell if I like Hilary Swank. I mean, I think she plays this role as well as somebody could play it, because it's supposed, yeah, to be this sort of like plucky, you know.
A little bit green, yeah, somebody who's
smart,
still, like, enthusiastic, like hasn't been jaded.
She's not super corrupt yet
by the job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is interesting, the two parts of this. I mean, this movie is not about like sexism, in that like every movie is kind of about sexism or whatever, or misogyny, but like there's sort of, the other cops are kind of like dismissive of her.
Which, yeah, a little bit like she's their little sister.
Yeah.
Kind of, well, you go on and you reinvent.
And they kind of are
you
telling like dirty jokes in front of her that are like kind of gross. You're like, okay.
Yep.
And then the other part, when Robin Williams is detailing what occurred when this woman died, and he's like, she laughed at me. She, yeah, laughed at me. And it's like, oh,
that's what I was like, going to say.
That's what every woman is scared of. You know, it's like, why? I mean, not to get deep, but it's like why women agree to do certain things, because if you're like, well, if I laugh or if I say no, what's going to happen? So I'll just go
he's
with it or whatever.
Stab you 18 yeah times,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, he is, says that he beat her to death because she laughed at his advances.
And he was so humiliated, yep, by it. Yep. It's a little male ego there for, yeah, you kids.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm really glad I watched. Wait, though, it is funny to imagine Paul Dooley at like the chief that was in LA, I guess, and then now moved, mm-hmm, to this like extremely, and they make a point of pointing this out, extremely remote town. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not Anchorage. This is not Juneau. This is not even like Ketchikan or something.
This is like nowhere.
I know. Yeah. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I mean, that John, I can't, Christopher Nolan is, you know, he's a promising young director.
He's a little talented, sort of. Yeah.
Heard him
somewhere. And the acting is very good as well,
really,
not just the principals. But I was thinking, especially like that scene with Al Pacino and the dead girl's best friend,
yes,
in the dump.
Yes,
where, yeah, it's just really. Oh. She's really good in that scene. The,
yeah,
two of them are really good, and she's very believable. And the nasty boyfriend.
Yes.
Jonathan Jackson. I was like, ooh,
formerly
of
General
Hospital. He was good.
He's good as like a kind of dirty punk kid.
Yeah.
That you're like, he's a bad guy, clearly, but right. he might have beat the shit out of her, but he didn't kill her. So,
he didn't kill her. Yeah. Yeah. Let's find some other things to lock him up for, you know. Great. So Robin Williams is going to frame him and one more dirtbag off the street, yeah. right? But he didn't do it.
He didn't
actually
do it. Now, I liked, I'm trying to think of who else. There was somebody else in here that I was. I like Nicky Catt.
I always like Nicky Catt.
I do too. He's somebody who I always felt like was going to have a bigger career, but I guess he's just kind of like a character actor, which is fine. I mean, listen.
His mustache is working hard.
He always plays really hateable people.
Totally. True. He always does. Yeah, and I always think of him in Dazed and Confused, where he's like, beats him up for like talking about smoking pot or whatever. But no, it was a good movie. I'm glad I finally, I don't think I've completed the Nolan filmography because I don't care about some of the, I don't want to see Tenet. I don't really care about that.
Well, I'll see it someday, maybe.
Didn't watch the last of his Batman movies.
No, like, I know. Like, I'm kind of done with this. But I do kind of feel like this is, again, he does go big, but this was one of the last times that Al Pacino was, like, kind of normal in a movie. Like, a believable cop. Oh, I know what I was going to say. The son situation, it would really freak me out.
Yeah.
Like, your brain just, like, can't wrap your head. You know, those first weeks of whenever the time changes, you're kind of like, wait, what time is it right now? Why does it feel like this? But that lasts. And then you adjust to it, and it's fine. But I don't know, sun all day long or whatever, light all day long. Yeah.
Well, that was a really good way to illustrate that point in the movie.
Yeah.
On the first day that they're there and they're talking about the scuzzy boyfriend, he's like, all right, let's go show up at a school and rattle his chain. And they're like, it's 10:30 at night.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Yeah, that must be so disorienting.
You would have to. I remember that movie with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds were like, The Proposal. I think it's supposed to take place in Alaska, and his family's rich, and they have like remote control, you know, blackout curtains and stuff that have to invest in those.
Let me pick that bone. Yeah, exactly. Why does this hotel/motel not have blackout curtains?
There's no
way. They should know by now.
It wouldn't.
Yeah. No excuse. Oh, good movie.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well,
next up is Into the Wild. This is a 2007 film directed by Sean Penn. And if I had remembered that the whole soundtrack was Pearl Jam, I probably wouldn't have.
I think it's just Eddie Vedder.
It's just like Eddie Vedder.
It's Eddie Vedder and Khaki King, who is great.
Yeah.
But it's mostly Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, it's mostly Eddie Vedder.
I like Pearl Jam. Like, I enjoy them. But this was every single time I was like, Jesus Christ.
I know.
Okay, are we playing the whole song of this?
Sorry, guys.
No, it's okay.
Well, I was not irritated when you picked this, Meredith, but I was like, ugh.
Because I said, when we were talking about it,
I was like, I don't love movies about, you know, rich idiots who go get themselves into trouble. But I ain't mad at you for picking this.
Well,
anymore.
I liked it when I watched it the first time. But you're right, Anne. It is about a rich idiot. It's this kid named Chris who graduates from Emory in 1990, I think. And he's had a tumultuous life. His parents are rich as hell. Poor baby. But they're very abusive to one another. Or the father is very abusive to the wife.
Yep. Well, and abusive to the
kids. And to the kids.
That's emotional. Yeah. It's not physical abuse, but it's definitely emotional abuse.
And so the movie kind of jumps all over the place in time. So there's a lot of flashbacks and flash forwards. But basically, he graduates from college. He's disenchanted with society. He has a sister who's kind of narrating the story from her perspective, but he decides to go off on his own and do a road trip across the country in his shitty Datsun, which eventually gets, I think, caught in a flash flood or something, and he starts hitchhiking. He sets his money on literal fire.
I mean,
which...
Well, the money that he has, he... Who graduates from college with $24,000 in savings?
So that's his college fund.
From Emory. Yeah.
Well, that's yeah.
with their college.
That's
fund
his college
intact.
Fund. He donates his 24 grand to Oxfam, I think. And it's not his money. It's his parents' money. It's his college
right.
fund. And then he burns his remaining cash, literally burns it on fire, which hurt my heart. But he goes on this whole journey. he goes to Northern California. He meets some hippies. He goes to South Dakota and meets Vince Vaughn, who eventually gets arrested for pirating TV or something, which...
One of the more restrained Vince Vaughn performances, I have to say. Yeah. Like, this is one of the movies I'm like, oh, yeah, he can be a good actor, not just a mugging asshole.
Right. And
I don't
this
think
is
he
when...
told a single joke out of the side of his mouth at any point right. in the entire film.
And this is when Vince Vaughn was ripped. Like, it was kind of fun to watch him. They have fun together. He meets a cast of characters. On his trip across the country, he eventually starts riding the rails. He meets a girl, but she's 16.
Thank God.
Gross. He eventually heads to Alaska on his own, hitchhikes and makes his way to like a very remote location, stumbles upon a bus and decides to make that bus his home. And tries to just, like, be self-sufficient. He's, like...
Be one with nature.
Yeah, and... reads a lot of Thoreau, does a lot of poetry. I really hate this kid. Like, I really... The whole time I was watching this, I just hated him.
I was a little bit like, oh, I don't know if I want to watch this movie. I also... Emil Hirsch kind of sucks the... guy that plays him. Mm-hmm. He's not a great guy. But I was like, I like all of the ancillary characters. Like I always like Catherine Keener. I just think she's like a warm presence and I like
her.
Oh
yeah.
And
Marcia Gay Harden plays his mother.
And Hal Holbrook was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for this. And he's lovely in this movie. And William Hurt's kind of scary to me, but whatever. Yeah. That's like a side
he's
note.
William Hurt. He's supposed to be scary.
He's a scary guy. But like, yeah, the guy is annoying. Until the end, maybe, where I was kind of like, okay, like he sort of learned this lesson-ish. Right.
A little
like,
too late.
People.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, in contravention to my earlier statements, I actually didn't dislike him at all. I read a review... where the reviewer said he's a guy that you can both like and pity at the same time. And he was kind of a pitiful... He was so lost.
Yeah, yeah.
He had these terrible parents. And, poor little rich boy, right? But he was clearly very unhappy growing up. And then he found out all this bullshit about his father and his family, which... really the sort of shifting sands of stability. He didn't have anything that he trusted in life anymore. And that was why he withdrew from society because he just felt that it was bad and he was going to get hurt sort of. And yes, only someone with incredible privilege would be able to make the decision to withdraw from society and, wander across the country. But I just felt like he was such a broken bird.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, he finds out at some point.
He was searching for something.
Yeah, he finds out at some point that he and his sister are bastard kids.
Yeah, his parents weren't even married because his father was cheating on his actual wife with them. And they have a sibling somewhere.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, so his whole world just kind of falls apart. And yeah, he writes a bunch of dumb poetry and reads a lot
of... Makes a bunch of dumb decisions.
Right, but he's 23 years old. That's what he's gonna do.
Yeah, that's very him. I did feel for him that he made this like just one careless mistake.
Yes. So he's starving at some point and he decides to search for like berries and he has a book that's like the edible plants or whatever and he eats something that it turns out to be extremely poisonous that is very close to something that isn't poisonous. And spoiler alert, it eventually kills him.
Oh. Now, this is interesting because, you know, I don't read a lot of nonfiction. I'm not that interested in reading about the real world. I'd rather escape from the real world.
Yes.
But I was like, this you know, John Krakauer is a good writer. Yeah, and I thought I might look into this, but then I started reading about it. And John Krakauer made a lot of theories out of not a lot of evidence. Mm-hmm. There's very little evidence that this actually happened to him, that that's how he died. And people that understand things a little bit better are like, yeah, I think he just probably starved, like ran out of food and ran out of game. The poison, whatever it was, wild sweet pea or something, that John Krakauer, that was his theory. And then later on he said, no, it probably wasn't that. It was probably the wild potatoes that he found. He put them in a bag that had mold in them, and the mold tainted the potatoes, and that's what killed them. But I mean, this is the part of the movie that's really speculative. But he did die.
He did die. I mean, when they found him, they said his body weighed 67 pounds. So he definitely starved. Like, there's a scene, a really horrible scene that I had to turn away from, where he kills a moose.
Oh, I couldn't watch that. It was long.
It was very long and very gruesome. And he tries to butcher it, but he doesn't preserve it properly. And so it just goes bad, like, immediately.
Yeah, he tries to smoke it, and he doesn't smoke it.
He's trying to put it into, like, moss or something. And he did a real bad job, and he just starved to death.
I mean,
this is the other thing where the privilege comes in, because he just goes off with, like, a wink and a smile and a copy of the bag of rice, and just sort of merrily assumes that everything's going to work out, because everything has worked out for him in his past, and really, it's a very charmed life he leads in his journey, like. So little that's bad happens to him until he gets beat up by the railroad cop. Like, that's the first time I think reality ever starts to intrude. And then you're right. By the time he figures out that he's made a colossal mistake, it's too late. He can't get out.
Yep.
The rivers, or I think it's the glacier melt-off, the summer glacier melt-off, they say, has made his passage out, like, he can't get out the way he came back in, and he doesn't have a topographical map. He just has a highway map. And I was reading that about a mile south of where he tried to cross, there was a passable crossing, and he just didn't go down there, didn't find it, because he was so blithely unprepared for, I mean, that's the frustrating thing, was that he did so little homework for any of this, and until he got to Alaska, it worked just fine.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like sort of speaks about Alaska, how incredibly hard it is. You can't, this is not the Salton Sea. This isn't like rando parts of America where you can kind of just like boop about. Like, this is
because
tough.
Until he got to Alaska, he had people who took care of him.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Every step of the way. Yep. He met the hippies, or he met Vince Vaughn, or he met Hal Holbrook, or he got rides from people. And this was for all that he's disenchanted with society, and he wants to, like, you know, get away from people and be one with nature. The minute there are no people there is when he starts to fall apart.
Yeah.
Let's not forget about the hot dog from the Europeans.
The Scandinavians.
They were Danish, I think. I was like, okay, she's not going to put her top on.
I guess so.
If you want to see some titties.
There you go.
You absolutely can.
Society, which he screams like 4,000 times.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, what would have saved him, but he wasn't into it.
He was just a little insufferable for me. I went to college with a kid who later went on to write a bunch of books about living in his van. He went to Alaska. He wrote a book called The McCandless Mecca, where he actually hiked.
Okay, those people need to stop.
He hiked out to the bus, and he wrote a whole thing about it. And
it's like a tourist destination now.
Yeah.
And they took the bus away and moved it because people kept going there.
They sent it to the University of Alaska or Anchorage or something because they had people
die. Yeah, they kept having to rescue people, or people were drowned in the river.
Pilgrimaging to the bus where the guy died. Like, how did you think this was going to end up differently
for you? Don't eat the poison potato.
Good advice. Might be the show title.
Don't eat the poison potato.
Just don't eat the poison potato. Could you just cook the moose?
Just grill it or something.
Yes.
The most annoying part is that he decided to name himself.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
Alexander Supertramp, which is the stupidest.
Again, 23-year-old guy.
Oh, my God. You know, I need to ask my sister. My sister went to Emory. She would have been a little bit younger than this guy, but I'm going to ask her if she heard tell of a fellow Emory graduate. Oh, goodness. All right, should we move on?
Let me just say.
Yes.
For all of that, like, we're complaining about this, but that was the person, right? It's not a flaw of the movie.
No.
That's who he was, and that was faithfully portrayed. But it's a beautifully shot movie.
It is.
It really is.
Sean Penn,
it is.
Beautiful. Not even just the Alaska parts, but all of it.
Yeah.
The cinematography is lovely.
Yeah. And really,
it's just beautiful to watch.
Captures, even though these people were like movie stars or whatever, it's like it captures this sort of on the road transient culture that happens.
And what a great story. Rainey, the guy who was with Catherine Keener, not an actor.
Yeah. It was a very Jeff Bridgian role.
Yeah,
and I looked up like, who is that? And I'm like, I don't know who that is.
He doesn't have a picture on his IMDb.
But he was excellent. And he's like, I liked it because I was like nervous that they were going to be, I don't know, scary or, you know, secretly stealing from him or whatever. But they were just kind of like kind
people
that were like listening to him. And when she gave him advice at the end, sometimes with hippie-ish stuff, I feel like unmoored. Like, where are you going? Like, do you have family? Like, what's happening? And I like that Catherine Keener was like, you need to talk to your family. Like, she was giving me advice at the end. Like, go, your mom is probably scared.
And clearly advice based on her own experience with her son.
Yeah.
And their relationship was in trouble, and he like helped rekindle it somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was deeply concerned they were going to try to sleep with him.
Yeah.
So.
Me too.
I was happy that it was more of a parental situation than it was a sexy situation.
Right.
And speaking of which, Kristen Stewart was great in this movie. Like, I haven't watched a lot of her. Not interested in Twilight.
No.
But, like, I see why she gets a bad rap, because whenever you see her in appearances, she is so clearly uncomfortable.
Yes.
Like, she hates press.
Yes. Yes.
And she, you know, and so she comes off as kind of like weird and sour a lot of the time.
Like aloof to the situation.
Yep. But she was really good in this movie also.
I think that she is a super weird actress, but I like that both she and, not to go on a Twilight thing, but she and Robert Pattinson have decided to be like, we're just going to do these weird ass movies, and we're weird, and that's just what we're going to do. And I think that they're largely successful at it. I mean, besides like the Batman or whatever, but she just kind of is like embracing her lesbianism and is, you know, does weird shit. And I think it's cool.
She's good in this. Yeah.
Yeah, she is.
She's very good.
Yeah.
There's a weird little indie movie called The Cake Eaters that I saw her in back when it was on circuit. I'm looking it up now. I'm trying to as quickly as possible to figure out when it came out. 2007, so early. It's not a very good movie, but she was very good in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember when she played Jodie Foster's daughter in Panic Room, and I was like, she's a good actor, and she looks like Jodie Foster. Like, they have sort of a similar, and I think they kind of have a similar, like, you know, child star to, like, somewhat stable adult situation. Also lesbian.
Which is the important thing. Yes. All right.
All right. Off to Hawaii.
Why don't you take us to the happy movie?
This is a really happy movie. Okay. I chose The Descendants and Alexander.
Oceans 4.
Yes. I did say I'm choosing The Descendants. What if I chose the Disney movie about like Maleficent's children or whatever? I've never seen it. But no, it's The Descendants 2011 movie directed by Alexander Payne. I have to say this. Okay. The movie, the broad deal with the movie is that it's about Matt King, who's played by George Clooney. He's his wife has just had a traumatic brain injury. So she's on life support. His family also concurrently owns this land on, I think, Kauai. And they have to sell it or figure out what they're going to do with it because of some
Because it's in a trust. It's like in a trust. It's like a limited trust, and in 7 years,
it's going to go.
It's what? It's use it or lose it?
Yeah, I don't know. So. They have to sell it to make money. Otherwise, it goes back to the government.
And it's a ton of money.
Yeah, it's a
there's like
hundreds of millions of dollars.
There's like 40 of them, and they're all going to be multimillionaires once this sale goes through.
But what I had to say, and I actually thought this was something amongst all four of these movies that is somewhat sort of tackled, but not really. But like how white people have sort of abused these lands that are like not. They've colonized these lands and now make money from them or destroy them or, you know, what have you. And there's, you know, some native people in each of these movies, but it's largely white people.
Mostly white.
Yeah. It's
I did like, before we go on, I did like in this movie there towards the end, there's one point where George Clooney says to his cousin, "We're Howley as shit."
Yeah.
For people that don't know, Howley is the term for like white Hawaiian.
Yeah. So it was like, some, you know, great, 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 great grandmother
some
was
colonizer.
Yeah, was Hawaiian, but then she married
a white guy.
And then it's like, I mean, when you look at the cousins, some of them, like Beau Bridges, have adopted like sort of a, you know, hang ten Hawaiian aesthetic. But really, they're white. They're white people. And they're going to have to sell this land. Anyway, that was sort of my overriding thing. I had seen this movie before, but it is like strikingly white. I do like that they comment on it, but it is very white. Anyway, so he's sort of grappling with these two things. He's sort of the family patriarch, I think largely because he's a lawyer.
He's the sole executor of the trust.
Yes.
So he has all the power.
Yeah. And so they're kind of doing, and actually it's something that I've had to do with work stuff. It's like, okay, we have to pick this one person to be in charge of selling all this stuff and developing into it. Or I've been the one that's been selling our services in order to be chosen to, you know, sell all of this land. But he's also dealing, his wife has been cheating on him with Anne's favorite actor. I'm sorry, Anne. I forgot that Matthew Lillard was in this. And I was like, oh no, it's Matthew Lillard.
I remember the first time I saw this.
I was like, oh, holy shit.
Matthew Lillard
can do something other than like nasty bro.
Yes.
I was like, he's good. And then I watched it again this time and I was like, I don't think he's that good. I was so shocked last time.
It was just as, you know, slightly better.
The bar is low.
No, it's really, really, really low. There's a lot that goes on in it, but those are the two kind of strains of it. He's also having to deal with his daughters. Now, this is another thing. I think why this movie, sort of how you're like, wow, Matthew Lillard is doing better than I thought he would. So an actress who I don't generally like, and I think she's very good in this, is Shailene Woodley. I don't like Shailene Woodley. I think she's really annoying. I think she is a perfect bitchy teenager.
Yeah.
Who, there's a scene, and I think this is why I ever just was like, oh, wow, this is a really good movie. There's a scene where George Clooney is telling, he brings her home from whatever boarding school she's in. And
she trouble.
Yeah. And he's telling her that he's just heard that they're going to have to, the mom's going to be taken off life support. This is, you know, her directive. And when Shailene Woodley goes under the water and cries, I was like, wow, that's really good acting. Like, I was like, I didn't think she was capable of acting that well, but she's very, very good at it. But yeah, I mean, it's just the story of this dad kind of coming to terms with the fact that like, maybe he's going to have to be more present in his family's life. And also at the end, he does not sell this piece of land, this like historic piece of land, and they're going to just have to figure out what to do. And it's not cut and dry.
He's coming to terms with like his wife's infidelity.
Yes. Yes.
And the fact that like, why does it hurt so much? Because he didn't love her either.
No.
He at some point wanted to get a divorce.
Yeah. Yeah. And he kind of like hates her, but also maybe realizes there are two people involved in a marriage, and yes, she cheated on him, but also like maybe he was not the best husband, as everybody kind of has said to him. Like, he wasn't abusive necessarily, but he wasn't like,
he's just
absent, neglectful.
Yeah. You know, it is funny though. It's just like, what's the dad? What her the wife's dad? Robert Forster. Is that his name?
Oh, yeah. Ooh, he's terrible.
He's so scary and, you know, just he loves his daughter so much, but he only sees things from her perspective. And it is interesting because every time that I've seen this, you think, oh, the wife's really bad. Like, she's this selfish bitch and she cheated on him. But this time I was a little bit like, well, it seems like George Clooney, like we said, he was just absent. Like, he was working all the time and it wasn't necessarily like he wasn't mean, but like she didn't feel like she had anything. And she was the primary parent. Like, he didn't know how to parent the little girl at all.
Well, honestly, not to say this about a child, I know. But I wanted to strangle her and throw her in
the
pool.
The only time, I think she's so fucking annoying, but the only time that I feel anything for her, and obviously, like, this is a play on emotions, that you don't hear really what the counselor at the hospital is saying, but they're finally telling her that the mom is going to die and she's really sad. And that was the only time that I was like, oh, I feel bad. Like, she's this, like, you know, unformed little girl and she doesn't really know what's going on. She's just mimicking what's going on around her. But she's really annoying. I mean, like, she's an annoying 10-year-old, but she's like an actively really annoying 10-year-old.
Yeah. And she's supposed to be because it demonstrates George Clooney's cluelessness about what to do as a parent. And
I love Shailene Woodley's
how to deal with
like,
a child and a teenager.
Shailene Woodley's like, good job with her, Dad. And he's like, I don't know how to parent her. It is this weirdly toned movie because sometimes it's giving you like George Clooney screwball comedy, you know, where he's running.
Yeah, like when he's running in his, without putting his loafers on.
Yes. Yes. And then sometimes it's really kind of touching and sweet. And the final scene where, you know, they're all cuddled up on the couch. You're like, oh, this is like sort of a sweet family movie. But it is, you know, it's just sort of a family movie. Though at some points you're like, God, they're so wealthy. Like, I am sort of sad with it for him, but they have this like lovely house. They live in Hawaii. They can go jump on a plane and go visit, you know, these various lands that they own. They can go camping.
His wife's lover.
I know.
Yeah, I would say, like, I remember the first time I saw this, I was like, I don't really
get
the point.
Yeah.
Right. It's such a, like you said, like a restrained movie.
Yeah.
And I guess the thing that I appreciated about it this time, I still don't. I mean, I do get it, but I'm like, okay, all right. But the thing that I appreciate was the whole movie was him struggling to take the high road.
Yes.
Yeah. It's George Clooney's character being very grown up.
Yeah.
You know, in a way that you don't always see in movies that are made of like big gestures and big emotions. Like, he's trying, like, referencing his wife's dad, who goes on this whole rhapsody about how perfect she was and what a wonderful, faithful wife she was. And I'm like, is he going to say it? Is he going to be like, well, your daughter was cheating on me, you know, and he doesn't.
No, he never does it. And
all the cousins are putting the pressure on him, and he's very gracious the whole time. And he could fuck over Brian Spears' marriage.
But he doesn't.
You know, with a wonderful Judy Greer.
Oh, she's the best.
So good.
She's the best.
But he doesn't, right? Yeah. Every time he takes the high road and like models the adult behavior for his girls.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that.
I know, because it's like I could say all these nasty things. And even when he has like alone time with Matthew Lillard, where he's like, I'm not going to say anything. He's actually doing the kind thing of saying like, first of all, fuck you. But secondly, like, if you want to see her, now is the time to see her. Because like, I know she loved you. And I want to extend this to you. And I do kind of like it, you know, Shailene Woodley is this like punk little bitch, but I like it when they're sort of working together a little bit, when they're like a father-daughter duo. Like, I'll pretend I'm your secretary and like we can go on this little mission together. When they decide to like, I don't know, become a family, I think it's really nice. I don't get, at the times that I've seen this, I still don't get Sid, like,
oh my
Alex,
God. Speaking of people you
want to punch.
One time I liked the grandfather.
Yeah, when he punches this kid. Like, why is he there? I don't understand. And there is, again, I feel like this was outlawed so long ago, but apparently in 2011, they were still saying the R word. And it's so shocking whenever you hear it. And I know it was supposed to be sort of a joke and it's bad that he's saying it, but it's still, you don't hear that word anymore. It's so shocking.
It's gross. Yeah.
Yeah. Really gross.
Yep. I remember when this came out, they made a huge deal out of, like, George Clooney plays a schlubby everyman. And, you know, he's wearing Aloha Hawaiian shirts and shorts and blah, blah, blah. He's still fucking George Clooney. Yes. He looks like a million bucks in this, even when he's wearing shorts with loafers.
Even when he's wearing, like, readers, you're like, all right, Silver Daddy. Yeah. Like, what's up?
You cannot take the movie star out of that man. No. It's not possible.
No, not at all. Not at all. But, yeah, like, I think really what made me like this the most, and it's not like this happy-go-lucky movie, is... funnily enough, is Shailene Woodley. I just thought she... I mean, I think George Clooney is a good actor. So it's like, oh, he did a good job. Whatever. But I think I was so, like, unimpressed by Shailene Woodley and everything I had seen. And I thought, wow, she does a really good job as, like, a snotty teenager. And, you know, there's Layard Hamilton makes a cameo.
Oh, my God.
And I always like Rob Hubel. I think he's sort of funny. But her friends, it's... A woman who I don't know, her name is Mary Birdsong, as I'm looking at the cast list, and Rob Hubel as Elizabeth, his wife's best friend. And they're just kind of like assholes. Like, it seems like all of their friends are just kind of rich assholes, which I guess is sort of probably what would happen on a place like Hawaii if you actually lived there and you had the money to have houses like that. You weren't just sort of like the local middle class.
Yep.
Anyway, that's the happy-go-lucky end. There are definitely movies. I mean, we could have chosen an Elvis movie, maybe, or I don't know. I don't know if I want to watch that, though.
This is a good batch. I enjoyed
it. Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
I'm glad. I know. I actually enjoyed. There wasn't a one that I was like, oh, my God. Like, I'm kind of this. There was no About Last Night in this one. Sorry, Mike. R.I.P.
I think it was before we started, but I mentioned that Red Lobster is going into bankruptcy. So
we're thinking of you, Mike.
What happened last night?
The one movie that I just said no and turned it off.
No. Absolutely not.
All right. Well, that brings us to the question of the week, which is, what movie makes you think of Alaska or Hawaii? We're giving you some options.
Yes, we are.
On this one.
Yep.
We'd like to know. Like, I looked at the Wikipedia list of...
Yeah,
there were a lot of movies shot in Hawaii that weren't set in Hawaii, and the same for Alaska. And I was frustrated with that because some of them I would have liked to watch. But I'd like to know what you guys think, what comes to mind for you.
Yep.
And with that,
I get Tishy recommends. Okay. This is something I found the other day when I was really like not wanting to work and I was wanting to play. You know, like I go through the Wordle and you know, all the various New York Times games.
Connections.
Yes, connections, whatever. And I was like, I need something more. I need to... So somewhere somebody linked to this, and it's called moviegrid.io. And it is like a... It's like a movie kind of guessing... It's not a guessing game, but like...
For folks familiar, it's the movie version of the Immaculate Grid.
Yes.
Which is the baseball one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, like, today, for instance, on the top, there's three columns and three rows. And on the top, the columns are $100 million plus box office run, three or more word title, released from 2010 to 2024. And then on
our sweet spot.
Oh, man.
Yes. Yeah, apparently. And then on the, I can't remember, whatever, on the column side, there's three actors. It's Jude Law, Jeffrey Wright, and Rachel McAdams. So you have to fill in those blanks. And you can't repeat a movie. So that's where I've been, like, really having to be better about it. Because sometimes I'll, like, be like, oh, yeah, that. And then it's like, oh, shit, I should have used that for that. Because I've gone back in the past and, like, played some of the past ones. But it's just sort of a fun game to kind of... And I really, really try to play. I obviously try not to cheat on it. And I'm like, I got to just use my little brain. And then sometimes I think I have such a good memory for movies. And I'm like, what's that movie? Like, Jeffrey Wright has been in a lot of shit. But I'm like... I know he was in American Fiction, but then I'm like, I know he's in a bunch of other things, but now I can't remember anything. But like, Westworld. I know, Hunger Games. That was the $100 million box office run. And then the French Dispatch was a three or more. Like Jude Law,
I never would have gotten that.
Jude Law, the $100 million plus box office run. I was like, I'm like going through it. What has Jude Law been in that has made $100 million? And I'm like, maybe Sherlock Holmes? But I'm like, I don't know. And then I remembered that he was in The Secrets of Dumbledore, whatever. And I was like, that for sure made over him. Even though I don't know a single person that has seen that movie, for sure, because people love that shit. So anyway, it's a really fun movie.
Telling me
that
Repo Man didn't make $100 million.
No, it did not. I was excited though for the Rachel McAdam ones. It was like $100 million. I know she was in a Marvel movie, but I just could not remember what it was. So I was like, I hope Mean Girls made over $100 million, and it did.
Yeah.
And then three or more word title was Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And then released from 2010 to 2024. What do you think I put in that spot?
The Notebook.
No. Come on.
Spotlight.
Spotlight. Yes.
She knew.
She knew. I did know. Anyway, it's a fine.
I knew The Notebook was too early.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Notebook is, 2004, I think. Yeah, 2004. Anyway, it's a fun little, there's some that are hard. And they have classic TV on here, and which are, that to me, that's a little bit harder. Because I know TV, but there's, I don't know that much about. Let's see what was on today. I'm clicking. Hold on. Come on. This, like, I don't know that much about Julia Garner. Like, I know a show she is in, but I don't know more than a couple shows.
Ozark.
Ozark. And I guess she was in The Americans, but like, yeah. Okay. Anyway. Yes. So moviegrid.io.
Fun.
Yeah.
For all you movie nerds out there.
That's exactly. Right. Rory will be
playing. Appropriate recommendation, mm-hmm. Hillary.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Once you're done filling out your movie grid for the day, you can come on over and join us at thisshowhaseverything.com to find the show. More importantly, go join the Facebook group where you can interact, answer the question of the week, chat with fellow listeners. People more interesting than us pop up there. I won't speak for all of us. People more interesting than me pop up there. All at the Facebook group, This Show Has Everything. You can email us at tshishow@gmail.com. That's also where you can send your voice memos. Like Renee and Ann did this time around. Two in one show.
Thank you, guys.
Woo.
Yes.
Love it.
As always, the AOL keyword is Tishy. And until we figure out where we're going to drive next when the road trip goes international, that was everything about the Tishy Cinema Road Trip Spectacular. Mahalo.
Woo! We did it! We did it!
I think you're going to need an oil change.
No way.
I was so hard to please. Look around, leaves are brown, and the sky is a hazy shade of winter. Hear the Salvation Army band.
Jingles doesn't care.